Since you enjoy this show, I thought I'd throw out there another podcast you might like. It's a show about the intersection of design, technology, and the creative process. It's the Design Better Podcast. And in each episode, hosts Eli Woolery and Aaron Walter bring you conversations with inspiring creative thinkers like John Cleese and David Sedaris, people who bring design and technology together, like Tony Fadahl, co-inventor of the iPhone and the iPod. So far, some standout episodes for me have been when they talk to John Cleese of Monty Python about creativity. That is one of my favorite topics and one of my favorite people. Then also one of my favorite musicians, Tycho, about his creative process. And they talk with Seth Godin about how creativity is an act of generosity. I've always been fascinated by design, the creativity behind it, the implementation of it, both to improve our lives from a functionality and user interface standpoint, also from an artful, bringing beauty into the world approach. So whether you're a design curious person like me, or a design pro, Design Better is a great listen that inspires and informs. Subscribe to the Design Better Podcast at designbetterpodcast.com or in your favorite podcast app like the one you're using right now. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Beyond the To-Do List. I'm your host, Eric Fisher, and this is the show where I talk to the people behind the productivity. This week, I'm excited to share with you a conversation I had with Anna Dearman-Cornick. I was recently on her podcast, It's About Time, which you can find the link for in the show notes. And in that conversation, we talked about my journey of podcasting and productivity and time management, different lessons that I've learned from this show along the way, as well as the importance of being flexible, the reality of trial and error, and that ultimately achieving goals is never a one-size-fits-all, and that is okay. Then I was excited to have her on this episode because she's talking all about her brand new book, Time Management Essentials, The Tools You Need to Maximize Your Attention, Energy, and Productivity. And in this conversation, we talk about some things from that book in terms of clarifying your vision and her journey towards creating this book and why she said you shouldn't need 37 different productivity books to get your productivity in order. This is a very dense book, but light and easy to read and easy to get clarity from. We also talk about putting the big rocks, your priorities, in place first. And in fact, we mentioned Franklin Covey and an example of that. And I found the link to that, a video explaining that and showing that visually on YouTube, and that's in the show notes as well. But essentially, it's a great visual of putting your important tasks in your schedule first. And overall, this is just a great conversation because Anna knows her stuff. She's been doing it for years, just like me. And so there's a lot to get out of this conversation. So I'll just get out of the way and say, enjoy this conversation with Anna Dearman-Cornick. Well, this week, it is my privilege to welcome to the show Anna Dearman-Cornick. Anna, welcome to Beyond the To-Do List.
Eric, thank you so much. I am so excited to be here. And it's a little bit surreal that you just said, Anna, welcome to Beyond the To-Do List, because I've been a listener of your show for so long and it's inspired so much of what I do and how I serve others. So thank you.
Honestly, you're welcome. I am so glad to have been part of that. I am also so glad to have been part of your show. You were gracious enough and had me on as a guest, and I will link up to that episode in the show notes for this one so people can go check that out, because it was, I think, a very lively and fun conversation. And I think we probably won't do too much crossover here, so it's completely different stuff. So yeah, but you've got a brand new book out. I'm really excited because, again, one of my recent guests was Mike Williams, who came out with his short book. And he used, again, everybody knows him from working with David Allen, really, but he's making his own mark. But I praised his book for how short and concise it is. You have more words in yours, but it's still the same kind of a size and an easy, fits in your purse, fits in your backpack, all that kind of stuff. It's called Time Management Essentials, The Tools That You Need to Maximize Your Attention, Energy, and Productivity. And man, that's a lot of stuff crammed in one book. But again, unlike most books where you're like reading and reading and reading to get to the good stuff, this is like dense. It's got a lot of stuff in it. So I'm really glad you have this out in the world. So thank you so much.
Thank you. And you know, it's funny, whenever I opened the box of books that McGraw-Hill shipped, for some reason, it was a little bit smaller than I expected. But it still felt so, like you said, it fits in your purse. It seemed like it's a great airplane read. It's a really good size. And I tried to write it in a way that it gets to the point.
So you've been doing your own show, though, your own podcast. Like I said, I was a guest. You've been doing that for a while now, and it's called It's About Time. And it's a podcast about work and life and balance and everything. And again, time management tips and productivity strategies. So I'm curious, when you do a show for so long and you cover all these different topics, how do you decide what goes in the book and what doesn't? Do you have to stick with like a certain outline or, you know, in other words, what was your journey to, okay, now's the time for a book and here's what goes in it?
Yes. So, you know, I have to take us back a little bit, because the journey to a book actually started back in 2009 when I was a scheduler to a United States congressman, spending my entire day managing time for someone else who somehow had to be everywhere at once. And I spent what felt like 10 to 12 hours a day in front of an Outlook calendar, planning every minute of his day. And as much as I loved that hustle and bustle, minutia, time management piece so early in my career, I missed home so much. I'm originally from Louisiana. You probably know that Louisiana is known for its amazing food. And so being in DC, I really started to miss things like boiled crawfish and shrimp etouffee and gumbo and my grandmother's Mayhaw jelly and all that good stuff. So I moved back home straight into the 24/7 world of crisis communications and government affairs, where literally every day of my life was a disaster filled with oil spills and hurricanes and earthquakes and droughts and tornadoes and floods and plant explosions and nonprofit embezzlement schemes and just all of this craziness. And I loved it. I loved that kind of work. And I was good at it. But being there for my clients when they were in their darkest points, when their reputation was on the line, when their businesses were hanging in the balance, as you can imagine, it really started to take a toll on me. I looked around and my boundaries were invisible and my relationships were crumbling. My health was deteriorating and I knew that something had to change big time. And this was right about the time that I started diving into every time management, productivity, work-life balance, goal-setting book that I could get my hands on. I walked away from the world of crisis communications trying to figure out what was next, letting all of these books guide my way. And you know, the crazy thing was, is that you know this, you read one book and it'll mention three more. And so then that sends you off in a direction. Those books send you to five more books. And before I knew it, I had read what felt like hundreds, it was probably closer to like 37 different books all about getting your life together. And at the time, I remember thinking it shouldn't take me reading 37 different books to figure out how to do life. And so I knew that one day I wanted to create a resource that could put all of this learning in one place. And that's where the podcast came in. That was the first step, was launching It's About Time in December of 2019, before, you know, everything changed in 2020. But launching that to create this place for people to come and listen to tips and strategies and stories. You know, one of my favorite parts of having the podcast is interviewing people like you, to find out how they're doing life. And so the stories that have been shared with me on the podcast, the strategies that I've passed on, all of those were huge starting points for what would eventually go in the book. So you could say that the book is like a best of the best of the podcast experience.
That's awesome. I couldn't help but notice that as you're going into the book, you look into the table of contents and you see it broken out into three separate sections, part one, two, and three. And they're called the essentials applied, and then beyond the essentials, which sounds a little bit similar to a title of something else I know of. But I'm curious, if you start with the essentials, okay, well then I'm trying to not mince my words here, but it's like, okay, you've got your essentials, but then you go beyond those essentials in part three. How do you decide what goes into the essentials? In other words, and we can take a quick trip through here, you start with the power of purpose. Why start there as far as essentials go?
You know, when it comes to time management, especially being a time management coach, one of the biggest misconceptions or myths that I encounter is this idea that time management begins by opening up your calendar or by turning to the next page in your planner and rearranging things. That time management starts with finding enough time to do all of the things. But over and over again, I have found that if you start by just rearranging things, you're just kind of making a mess. And so I knew that in time management essentials, I wanted to start from a place of purpose. We can't effectively rearrange the things that are on our calendar until we get crystal clear about what matters most to us. And so that's why if we're to strip down what time management really is, time management is the way that you spend your time with intention. And so you have to know your purpose. You have to have a direction that you're heading in order to do that. And most people don't pause. Most people don't take that time. It's so easy to get caught up in the day-to-day of crossing things off of your to-do list and heading to the next meeting. Maybe it's unexpected, but I wanted to anchor our conversation around time management with purpose and give a clear roadmap to identifying your purpose, articulating it if that's something you'd never done before.
Now, some people may know that, like they've got the head knowledge of, okay, I do need to know my direction in order to go in that direction as, you know, slowly or as quickly as I can, ideally quickly, because we all want to hurry somewhere. Right. But it's hard for people to be able to, if they already feel like they don't have time, set aside the time, find the time to then figure out their time by figuring out their purpose first, right? So what do you say to those people?
Oh, I used to be you, and that's why my life was such a mess. I can't tell you how many planners I purchased early in my career that had all of the goal setting and vision setting worksheets in the front, and I would skip over all of that. I was like, that's dumb. I don't have time for that. I'm going to go straight to just putting in my dates and filling things in. And then as the year went on, I would wonder why nothing seemed to make any sense and why I felt like I was just spinning my wheels. I participated in a course a few years ago that I invested a lot of money in. And so whenever they asked me, whenever the course prescribed in the first lesson to create a vision board, after I finished rolling my eyes, I sat down and I got to work creating this vision board because, hey, I invested the money. I'm going to follow through and do it. And taking time to, one, decide what my vision for the future looked like, and then to capture that vision in the form of pictures and then actually have this thing that I could reference, that changed my life. Within a year, I had bought a home. We had moved. I started a business. We started a family. Did that vision board change everything? Or did stopping to actually clarify my vision change everything? And I know it was from stopping to clarify my vision. And I get that when you don't have a step-by-step, step one, do this. Step two, do this. It can feel really intimidating. And so that's what I wanted to make so simple in this book, to make creating your vision a no-brainer. There are two super simple exercises. One is about thinking of your life from the perspective of speaking with a biographer. And the other is writing a letter to you from you in the future. I mean, it's about as step-by-step and simple as it gets. So if you are reading this on a plane, you can do these in 30 minutes. And so it's all right there to make it happen.
That's a great way to start. And one of the things I want to call out here is I know we're talking a little bit about part one, the essentials, but I found it curious. And now I think I have a bit of a clue here as to why when part two, the essentials applied, opens with a time management self-assessment, you would think most of the time, oh no, let's start with the self-assessment. Then you will be able to guide you to where you need to go and what's most important in the rest of this book for you. It's because that's a huge roadblock for most people to get started with. It's like, all right, I'm going to give you a whole bunch of homework up front and then we'll get started.
Right. That and the questions in the self-assessment, you have to know what a purpose is and how a purpose and a vision and your values tie into time management in order to give accurate responses for the self-assessment, which I do think is great. I love this, having this quick checkpoint so that you can be laser focused as you continue reading.
Yeah. So I'm looking at the other parts here of part one here in the book, and there's other, just to get, you know, call it out. It says, you know, the next one is when everything feels important, which we can all identify with, because all the things feel all the importance all the time. It's just like, okay, there's a lack of hierarchy. There's a lack of prioritization there. And then you go into productivity pitfalls to watch out for, and then time management tactics to save today. And all of those are kind of like a chapter in a course, really, as I was going through the book. And I was like, oh my gosh, like each one of these is almost book worthy in and of itself for a lot of people, right? So like I said, it's a dense book. We started with Power of Purpose. I jumped ahead to time management, the self-assessment, which is part of part two. But then going back into part one, the essentials, what made you place when everything feels important, productivity pitfalls, and then those tactics in the essentials at the beginning versus later?
So over the last few years, I have had the honor and privilege of working with dozens of clients one-on-one as a time management coach. And in that process of asking questions and listening and paying attention to the most common points of confusion and struggles that people have with their time and how they live their life, over and over again, a pattern began to emerge in that it didn't make sense to go straight in and start sharing about time blocking and task batching and creating theme days if you weren't sure what your priorities were. And making decisions about your priorities was nearly impossible if you didn't have a vision for the future or know your core values. And so over time, an order to things, an order of operations, you could say, really began to fall into place. And so that's exactly why that part one, the essentials, is organized the way it is, because it really does build one after the other. When you know your purpose very clearly, prioritization is easier. When you know your priorities and then you have an idea of these obstacles to be on the lookout for, these potential pitfalls that can get in your way, productivity, I mean, procrastination, Parkinson's law, the planning fallacy, then time blocking, task batching, and theme days, those tactics really can be effective.
Yeah, it's like handing somebody a tool chest with all these different tools in it. And you're like, okay, go off and be, you know, constructive. And yet no one showed you how to use them. Now that might be cool to like a 10-year-old boy. It's like, I'm going to just go hit things and drill things and screw stuff all over into the walls and whatever, like we should let kids do just for the sake of the experience. I'm picturing my nephew in my mind right now doing that on my grandmother's backyard deck. It's a really great memory of mine because we were having fun doing that. But like in real life, running off with these tools and just saying, okay, now go do it, doesn't matter because you haven't been shown how to use them. So then applying them, part two, is where it really starts to actually become practical.
Yes. Part two is the real fun stuff.
Yeah. So the essentials applied, I mean, again, what good is talking about productivity if we're not learning to actually apply things? So this section starts with the time management self-assessment. Let's talk a little bit about, since we've already mentioned it, what is in that self-assessment in case somebody wants to be a nerd and maybe jump ahead to it?
Sure. So the self-assessment is just a quick opportunity for you to read through different statements pertaining to your vision, to your values, how you approach time, what your weekly schedule looks like, what decision-making feels like for you, because the coming chapters all speak to the different elements and statements mentioned in the essentials. So it really enables you to ask yourself, okay, what does this look like in my life right now? And if any of those elements are present, awesome. But it also can alert you to potential gaps and potential opportunities to really perk your ears up and pay attention in the coming chapters.
Very cool. Yeah. I think that having a self-assessment, again, we've all had this kind of, and people that have listened to the show for a long time know, self-awareness is a huge key. It's something I bring up all the time because you have different levels of self-awareness, as well as seasons pass, you have to check in on yourself and the things that you've agreed to, whether, you know, it's this hat that you wear or how many hats you're wearing and what season you're in and how many hats you should or shouldn't be wearing at that time. Pre-recording, I was talking about that I didn't accept a certain hat at one point in time. I said no to something and it made me feel really good that I didn't say yes to it because it wasn't the right time for that hat.
And it enabled you to wear other hats even better.
Yes, exactly. And so that's, you know, that's the whole essence of, you know, opportunity cost. You don't feel like, oh, well, I mean, because every time you say yes to one thing, you're saying no to every single other permutation. I don't know how much of a geek or nerd you are, but I know some people are like me. And right now we're permeated with this whole concept of the multiverse, everywhere and anything, everywhere, all at once. And it's like one choice pivots you off into, you know, not going down all the other paths, but it takes you down the one. And so the concept here is, well, what if we did this? What if we did this? What if we did this? And it's all the different permutations in all the, you know, so anyway, you get the picture.
Oh, yes. As a time nerd, Loki and all of the random timelines, that was, yes, 100%.
Yeah. So they're speaking our language, not just sci-fi, but also the philosophy and practicality of time travel slash choice and its effect on all of that. And that's essentially what we're saying here. And so, you know, not to geek out too much, but yeah. So in other words, self-assessment, it's important. The long way around to say that you have to know, you have to check in with yourself because then you can make spur of the moment decisions if you have to, but ideally you'll have had enough mental pathways and be checked in enough with your purpose. Hence, that's why that's at the beginning of the book and this conversation, that you're informed by that and your decisions and your pre-decision. You know, you've already made the decisions. Now it's just that everything flows through that. It's your lens. It's your perspective. But again, lenses get dirty. So the self-awareness, you polish it up.
Definitely. I love that. Love that visual.
Still searching for a great candidate for your company? Don't search, just match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch that busy work. Instead, use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. I wish I had Indeed when I was in the hiring process in roles in the past because it is a slow, arduous headache of a process to find the right people. Or, at least it used to be, join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to find and hire great talent fast. In fact, in the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/to-do list. Just go to Indeed.com/to-do list right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/to-do list. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you enjoy Beyond the To-Do List, I invite you to check out Best Laid Plans. I'm Sarah Hart Unger, the host of Best Laid Plans, a podcast devoted to all things planning and planning adjacent. I talk about everything from paper planner reviews to deep dives into all things productivity, from keeping track of goals and tasks to fitting in your true priorities and reducing the stress around planning and organizing across different areas of life. I am a practicing physician and mother of three, so I have a lot going on in my own life and am intimately familiar with the time constraints that impact us all. And I love sharing my own productivity strategies and learning from others who have their own ideas to share. I invite you to check out Best Laid Plans, available on all podcast platforms, or visit my website, theshoebox.com, theshubox.com, to learn more.
You've got some other things here in the essentials applied section. So block your boulders. I'd love for you to talk about that a little bit and what that means.
Sure. You know, I find that the concept of priorities, just such an abstract concept. And it reminds me of being a kid and hearing you need to get your priorities in order, or what are your priorities? Get your priorities in line. And, you know, now as a parent, my kids are only 4 and 2. So I haven't quite launched into that myself, but I know those words will be coming out of my mouth at some point, hopefully followed by coaching through identifying their priorities. But so many of my clients have come to me just struggling with how do I differentiate between all of the different things that are on my plate? Everything seems important. I'm not getting everything done. I'm working all day and I feel busy, but I'm not doing the most important things. And so I borrowed the concept. It's very similar to the parable of the pickle jar. It's been called, where instead of thinking of priorities as just one type of thing, it's instead imagining different types of priorities as boulders, big rocks, and pebbles. And so chapter 5, Block Your Boulders, walks you through the process of deciding what is a boulder priority in my life? What is a big rock priority in my life? What's a pebble? Assigning those different types of priorities to the different things on your list, and then arranging them in your schedule based on their weight.
Yeah. And I've seen somebody do this example, like literal example in like doing a speech. It may have been a sermon or something. I don't know. But somebody had it was like a big giant pickle jar, giant one, you know, and it was empty. And they did the example where they had two, actually, I think is what it was. And they did it the wrong way first and showed us that then when they tried to pour any water in, put all the little ones in, then the medium, and then they couldn't fit anything else in, and then they couldn't fit anything in at all. And then they did it reverse and it worked, and, you know, example, et cetera. And if you haven't seen that, in fact, I probably should do the hard work of finding hard work. It's hard work to Google something. No, on YouTube, I should go look up and find a great example of a visual of somebody really doing this in a great way and including it in the show notes. So note to self, going to do that, because you really need to see it visually. You really do, right?
I agree with you. Whenever there are times when I speak or present to groups, that I do a live version of boulders, big rocks, and pebbles. And my boulders are these fake lemons, because might as well change it up. My big rocks are, you know, some big rocks. And then my pebbles are usually things like fruity pebbles or rice or something like that, just to give some fun color to it. If people are unfamiliar with that visual, it's always so surprising because it does lead to such an aha moment when you put your boulders into your schedule first, which you'll find out these are the things that are important to you. They are not urgent and they help you show up as your best self. These are the things that we very often put on the back burner, things like working out, things like scheduling a regular date night with your spouse, things like cultivating relationships, those things that, again, they're very rarely urgent, but if you put them off and put them off and put them off, eventually that part of your life will catch on fire. So putting them in first, then adding in those big rocks, those things that are important, are urgent, and move the needle in your life and work so that you are consistently making progress toward that vision, and then letting the pebbles fill in all of the rest of the space. The things like making the dentist appointment or picking up the dry cleaning or returning the thing to Amazon, whatever it is, just letting that fill in the spaces in between. And one of the things that I loved in writing this book was being able to partner with a really awesome illustrator, Diane, and she actually drew boulders, big rocks, and pebbles and placed them in a schedule to represent what this would look like in practice. And so that was really fun to see that vision come to life.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that is a really great visual that's already included in the book. So you don't have to look too far, but seeing it happen, it just really gives kind of a perspective. I was going to say, putting in, as you were naming what those boulders are for our lives, and that often those are the things that go out the window first, which is weird because they're the heaviest things, but putting them in first actually creates a foundation that we can stand on, so that then when things get crazy, because they always do, like the most productive people in the world don't have easy lives. They just have created a better hierarchy and they've put the most important things in there first. They then have those, like, in other words, you listed off a date night, you listed off working out, even just going with those two things. I'll just kind of walk down the path real quick. One, the working out thing, the science is there that says doing actual physical activity and working on your health makes you better at being able to deal with stress, etc. How much more is that going to make you able to handle all the other big rocks then, and then the pebbles as they come along? Same thing with date night. That's part of a relationship that then helps you have stronger relationships. And again, you insert yours here, but those things that grouped together are so big and strong and foundational, allow you to then stand on those things and deal with the other things so much easier. Easier, not easy, easier.
Exactly. I like to think of boulders, once you have them in place, they really form your milestones or your checkpoints within your day or your week. One of my most important boulders is bedtime stories with my girls. And I have a calendar appointment on my calendar that says bedtime stories every single day. I did not send a Google calendar invite to my 4 and 2-year-old and expect them to accept it, but it's on there because it's a visual reminder of what is most important to me and how I want to show up as my best self as a mom. And so when I get an invitation to do a podcast interview or speak to an organization, or if a client asks, hey, can you do a quick call with me? And it conflicts with bedtime stories that has a bolder space on my calendar, I have a decision to make. And so I'm able to ask myself, do I want to move this bolder for this opportunity? And it gives me that opportunity to make a decision rather than accidentally scheduling over and running out of time and the time not being there. And so bedtime stories as a boulder.
Yeah. And that's not to say, and I mean, again, I see you go off to go speak, et cetera, at different places. And the thing is you're not saying there aren't exceptions where that's going to happen and you may still FaceTime in to do that, right?
Exactly.
If you can't get home because you're out of town far enough that a flight's just not going to make it work, et cetera. But you're at least saying, I've drawn a line in the sand. And when it comes up to that, then, oh, I'm aware of it. Again, self-awareness. And then you decide how to, oh, sorry, girls, or sorry, kids, I'm going to miss it tonight, but we're going to do it through the phone, or we're going to do it, you know, FaceTime, et cetera.
Exactly.
Again, most people would just say, that's a little too structured. I don't know that. But again, what gets calendared gets done, as Michael Hyatt says. So, you know, right?
Yes.
So carrying this on, there's a little bit more here in part two, and then I jump into part three for a little bit. Taking all that we've talked about in terms of the boulders and the big rocks and the pebbles into the remainder of part two section, where you're designing your ideal week and winning your week before it starts, how does that then inform that?
Yes. So it's kind of like we talked about in part one, starting with time blocking and task batching and all of those tactics without knowing your purpose would just kind of be a hit or miss exercise. Designing your ideal week, creating a template for your week, deciding how you would like to fit in all of the different pieces of your life is much easier when you have identified your boulders, your big rocks, and your pebbles. So again, it all builds one after the other. And then winning your week before it starts, that's doing a weekly planning session. And now they have so many different names, weekly review, weekly preview, you know, weekly planning, get your game plan, whatever you want to call it. But having your weekly planning session with yourself is so much easier when you have your ideal week already mapped out. And so that's why we have it in this order, to understand your boulders, big rocks, and pebbles, to use those boulders, big rocks, and pebbles to design a week that enables you to bring consistency to your life, to show up as your best self in the different areas of your life, to build in time for transition, because that's when we tend to get lost and underestimate how much time we have, is because we forget about the point A to point B and the time we spend walking from the parking lot to the door, whatever it is. And it just having that ideal week that I talk about in chapter 6 can relieve so much of the decision fatigue that we feel on a daily basis, because we're not starting each day with a clean slate asking ourselves, okay, how am I going to spend my time today? We know that, hey, on Tuesdays, I typically do X, Y, and Z. That enables us to spend so much more of our limited mental capacity on important decisions or creating or doing the work that we're meant to do.
Exactly. Yeah. And so we take all this and we move on to beyond the essentials. And there's different pieces here. These are kind of just good to know, good to apply overall. Like this is kind of the grout in between all the rest of the stuff once we put it into practice. I'm going to list off really quick the four main chunks here. One is get mentally organized. Another is get energized. get focused, and get rest. And I know by going over these all look like topics, again, singular topics of episodes that I've done. So
all of these would have been their own individual book. And
yes,
there are books, yes, about each one of these things, which again led me to, man, can we just put it all in one place?
Yes. Yeah. Again, you shouldn't have to read 37 books, like you said earlier.
Right. But the great thing is that those books exist. So if you want to take a deeper dive, if you get so curious about getting energized, these are the chapters that are going to lead you off on the goose chase to the other good books.
Yeah. And then there's probably other things that it could have fit in here. I'm curious why you chose these are beyond the essential elements here.
Definitely. So again, so much of what went into this book, including these four chapters beyond the essentials, came from the consistent struggles that I encountered working with my one-on-one time management clients and hearing from members of the It's About Time Academy that they felt, I've got my ideal week and I am doing my weekly planning session, but I can't find anything on my laptop. Or I'm wasting so much time each day because I can't stay focused on one thing long enough to get anything of substance done. And so once you've got those key foundational pieces in place, this is what enables you to clear out any of the remaining cobwebs, to clean things up and level up your productivity, level up your time management, just make it that much better and easier on yourself.
Yeah, it makes sense. And so again, you've got different things. I mean, obviously we've talked about the importance of rest. We've talked about getting focused. These are all born out of the struggles of your clients. However, are there any that are more personal to you in particular?
Oh my goodness. I have struggled and muddled through all four of these areas, from getting mentally organized and, you know, especially being a parent and sharing parenting responsibilities with my husband, owning a home and sharing home ownership responsibilities with my husband. I find that so often all of the information about parenting or all of the information about the home lives in one person's head. That's not incredibly effective whenever you're doing this as a partnership, whenever you're working together to take care of your family and take care of your home. And so a big part of getting mentally organized talks about creating a dashboard with all of those little bits and bobs, pieces of information that you find yourself just searching for over and over and over again, to put in one place, create almost like a family guidebook or a company guidebook, something that you can quick reference and grab. Even better if it is digital and in a cloud, so that you can very easily share that, especially now that I'm doing more traveling to speak to organizations all over the country. That means my husband is at home on dad duty. He doesn't have to call me and ask me what our children's social security numbers are, because we have a shared dashboard. We don't have to scramble to find that information. And it seems so simple, but the way that it improves communication, the way that it saves us time and, more importantly, stress, it's so worth it. So that's been an incredibly practical example. But even getting enough sleep, I used to be someone who thought that sleep when you're dead, you know, rest is for the weak. I had a boss several years ago who prided himself on sleeping 4 hours a night. I don't know how he functioned. Not well, apparently. And digging into the importance of getting enough sleep and all of the health benefits. I mean, just getting that 7 to 9 hours of sleep each night, I think, doesn't get the attention that it deserves for being the ultimate productivity strategy. Because without that good sleep and without consistent rest, we're not firing on all cylinders. We're not making good decisions. We're not being effective and precise, and we're not able to focus. And so that is one piece that definitely I could not leave that out when thinking about what's beyond the essentials.
I have a story that you brought up to mind now when you were talking about your old boss here and how they functioned. I know that they probably weren't functioning. My first semester in college, I was staying up because you could. No one was around, and everybody, well, no one was around to tell you to go to bed, but everybody was around to hang out with. And it was like midnight to one every single night almost. And we weren't doing studying. We were just hanging out. We were watching. We were playing video games. Anyways, and eating pizza. But and then I had early morning classes that I was barely getting to because anyway, first semester, lots of lessons learned. But also the key here is that my roommate at the time, he would get up in the middle of the night and type on his computer and have his desk light on. So not only was I getting less sleep overall, but I was getting less quality sleep because I was being woken up two or three times throughout the night saying, dude, go to bed and stuff like that. So it got to the point where extended sleep deprivation, it was like being hazed. At some point there, I remember trying to tell somebody something and saying, oh, I need to call so-and-so. And it was my girlfriend at the time, and I couldn't for the life of me think of her name. And it just made me think, oh, there's a problem here. Something's going wrong. And luckily, she was not there when that happened. But that's the kind of stuff we're talking about. Cognitive, like, basically, you're effectively drunk. There are studies that show that. Sleep deprivation, doing machinery, let alone data entry or any knowledge work, you're not functioning at any kind of even baseline cognitive level. And so second semester was way different. I was taking naps in the afternoon and all that. I love naps, by the way, and still do to this day now since then. So very important.
Yes. Yes. A friend of mine said recently that an adult taking a nap is the ultimate success flex, just to be able to take a nap and enjoy it and have that time. But hey, if you make taking a nap one of your boulders, you can make time for it in your ideal week and plan for it when you do your weekly planning session.
I love it. And again, I want to make it almost that badge of honor instead of the, oh man, I get so much done and I only sleep 4 hours a night. No, I take naps should be the bragging rights moving forward.
Yes, I put it on a coffee mug. I'm here for it.
Yes. So we've done honestly a fairly just skim over the book, even though we've mentioned lots of things. Like I said, it's a dense book and you've done a great job compiling and pulling together all the things, all the books, so to speak, in one place, and then setting up so people can do deep dives as needed. But let's point people to where they can grab the book and also check out your podcast.
Sure. Thank you. So you can find the book just about wherever you purchase books. But if you want a shortcut, head to annadkornick.com/book. That will take you directly to not only order the book, but I also have about $500 worth of really fun bonuses that you can use to implement what you learn as you read. An action guide, a summary of all of the essential takeaways, a masterclass that you can dive into and watch to learn a bit more. And so don't miss out on those bonuses. And then I would love to invite you to tune into my podcast, It's About Time, a podcast sharing stories and strategies to inspire better work-life balance wherever you listen to podcasts. And I have new episodes that drop every Monday.
Awesome. Again, that's It's About Time. And everything we've talked about, including that YouTube video that I've got to now go look for the rocks and that whole example, and the link to me as a guest on your show, It's About Time. I will link to that up in the show notes and everything. So Anna, it's been great, one, talking with you on your show, having you on mine. And again, this is one of the books that's going to my list on Amazon of the best productivity books. So, and by the way, if people want to check that out, I'll link that up in the show notes as well. So, Anna, it's been great talking with you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much. It has been my pleasure, Eric. Thank you.
Well, that's another podcast crossed off your listening to-do list. I hope that you enjoyed listening in to this conversation with Anna Dearman-Kornick. And I hope especially that you go grab her book. Again, it's short, sweet, concise, but dense and packed with lots of value. And make sure to check out my appearance on her show, It's About Time, as well as that Big Rocks video. The links to both of those in the show notes for this episode at beyondthetodolist.com. If you found this episode helpful, I hope that you will share it with somebody that you know needs to hear it. Do them that favor. Do me that favor. Hit share in your podcast player app of choice and send it over to them. Also, make sure to check out all the great deals from our sponsors at beyondthetodolist.com/sponsors. Thank you so much for sharing. Thanks again for listening, and I will see you next episode.